We are going to have a corny discussion this hour and a celebration of a favorite seasonal food in Wisconsin, sweet corn. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, August the 19th. Sweet corn is plentiful at our local farmers markets and grocery stores these days. How many ears can you eat in one sitting? You can put that to the test this weekend in Sun Prairie, where corn lovers from all over the Midwest, more than 100,000 of them, will consume mass quantities of sweet corn. The Sweet Corn Festival in Sun Prairie prompted us to put together this show celebrating sweet corn. We will first talk about the crop itself and the different kinds of corn grown in Wisconsin. And then after 6:30, we will devote our time to the eating of corn. What are some of your favorite corn recipes, aside from eating it right off the cob? Not that there's anything wrong with that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first guest is John Lauer, a professor of agronomy at UW-Madison, an expert in corn production. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So I see an article here that the corn crop in Wisconsin is pretty good, but that I don't think includes the sweet corn, does it?
No, generally those yield estimates that come out are for field corn in the state.
And so what's the diff, field corn versus sweet corn?
Yeah, we grow about 4 million acres of corn in Wisconsin. 3 million acres of corn are used for what we call feed grain, or just regular grain. That's the grain that will be harvested this fall. And then we grow another 1 million acres of corn silage, which is used for livestock feed and that sort of thing. And then we grow about 100,000 acres of corn, sweet corn, that's used for canning purposes, as well as what you eat off the cob and more directly consumable by people. In general, field corn is also consumed, but it usually has to be processed in some manner. That's generally the yield estimates that are given are oftentimes for that particular part of the crop, the field corn part.
And for the field corn part, it's going to be a good harvest?
Well, right now there's projections that are made on the first of every month, going from August 1st through actually finishes up in January with the final estimates, but it goes through November for actual measuring of yield. The first estimate came out August 11th, and the yield was estimated 159 bushels per acre, which ties really the best August projection we've ever had, and that was last year, actually. So we have a very good crop out there, although as you visit around, there are people that feel that it may not be quite that high. But we certainly have a good crop growing and going in many parts of the state this year.
And what does that mean for farmers and consumers?
Well, for farmers, of course, they get paid on the amount of yield that they get. So they get paid by the price per bushel. So that makes their economics flow a little bit better. From a consumer standpoint, it doesn't really make that much difference because, for example, in a box of cornflakes, whether corn is at $7 a bushel or $2 a bushel, there's probably only about 8 to 10 cents in that box of cornflakes anyway in terms of the value of corn. And most of that gets caught up and used by middlemen along the way. So as far as the farmer goes, it's great for the economics. As far as the consumer goes, it's probably not that big of a deal because so little of a bushel of corn is actually consumed by the consumer.
Mm-hmm. I just thought maybe second, that in terms of meat or dairy, that it might have an influence.
Oh yeah, it will. It's certainly feed costs and things that go in to the production of milk and dairy. That's always a concern by farmers, and they need to be able to afford feeding corn, certainly, But again, that will affect their overall cost in 100 weight of milk. Mm-hmm. So there is some influence there, certainly.
What I'm reading about different varieties of corn, like flint corn for Indian corn and dent corn. Are those different kinds of field corn, or what are those?
Right, those are different kinds of field corn. In the southern part of the state, in the southern part of the U.S., the typical varieties that are hybrids that were grown a long time ago, well, even today, but especially a long time ago, were called flower corns. And in the northern part of the U.S., those flower corns didn't do very well. And at the time, Native Americans would grow a kind of corn called flint corn. Basically, what this is a difference in the endosperm, or the white part of the corn kernel. Dent corn is basically a cross between that southern flower corn and the northern flint corn. And that's primarily what we grow today across most of the corn belt is something called dent corn, which is basically has a little dimple in the top of the corn kernel. As you go north, though, in Wisconsin, there are more and more flint corn backgrounds in the hybrids that are grown in the northern part of the state. So they're still present. It just refers to the amount of hard, what we call hard endosperm in that kernel.
And then what is popcorn?
Well, popcorn is a type of flint corn that is specifically grown and selected for and bred for popping volume mostly. And so that is a type of flint corn, very hard. I mean, if you can't really eat popcorn unless it's popped, but it's a type of flint corn.
And I see so many different colors of popcorn. I mean, you can grow different colors of corn, I guess.
Yep. Corn is very genetically diverse. There are all different kinds of colors of corn, and you can breed for many different types and qualities of corn. And each part of the corn industry has got types of corn that they're very interested in using for their products. There's a lot of different ways to breed for corn. A lot of very very genetically diverse species of plant.
So how is the sweet corn crop doing?
Well, I think it's probably doing pretty well. I know that we had some last night here at home, and I know that it's in the store. And I think it's doing pretty well. What we're most concerned about with sweet corn more than anything is the amount of pest pressure that we get into the corn, because no one likes to have a corn earworm or things like that on your corn. And I think in general it's been pretty good so far this year.
Yeah, I had an ear of corn myself last night, and it's a real favorite in our house this time of year. Do you just put butter and salt on yours?
Well, I use butter for sure, but not so often salt.
Oh, really? You go salt free, huh?
I go salt free, yeah. Yeah. My wife uses it, though.
Well, sometimes I see bicolor or tricolor or, you know, I don't know, super sweet versus mm-hmm. just sweet. Are there different varieties of sweet corn?
Yes, there are. And we have at the University of Wisconsin the only sweet corn breeder in the country now. His name is Dr. Bill Tracy. And his mission and job is to develop different types of sweet corn. There are a number of different sweetness genes, if you will, that are available for sweet corn breeding. And Dr. Tracy's really concentrated on the super sweets. And of course, there's bicolors. And again, it just comes back to the color of that seed coat that gives it the different colors. But the sweetness comes from these different sweetness genes that can be bred for.
I was going to ask that. So it's in the gene itself, because that it really does. It tastes like sugar almost.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Usually what happens is on a corn plant, sugar is actually the product that's transported from the leaves through the stalk to the ear into the kernels. In field corn, that sugar gets converted to starch. But in sweet corn, that sugar just stays sugar. and that's what accumulates then in the kernels. As you dry down, I don't know if you ever planted sweet corn kernels, but as sweet corn dries down, they become very shriveled, and it's because there was really no conversion of that sugar to starch, and so it's a very watery, sweet type of a kernel.
Can I? What if I want to plant a sweet corn kernel? Will I actually get a sweet corn stalk in my backyard?
Probably. Usually, when you're eating sweet corn, the time that it's harvested is probably before the time that it would be ready to be stored as seed. So, in other words, you're eating it very early. It's very immature when you're actually eating it. If you were to let it go, it'd be more likely to survive and be able to be planted and grow. Those are varieties, so those could be grown as seed the following year.
Yeah, my producer director Bill Martins told me that someone he knows ended up getting stalks of producing sweet corn in her backyard, and she never planted the sweet corn, and she's only guessing that maybe a critter buried a seed.
Right. Yeah, that could happen. Again, sweet corns are what we call varieties, and field corn is what we call hybrids. If you were going to try to do that with field corn, that second generation would be very different than that first generation of hybrid corn. But with sweet corn, you could do that, and you would have basically the same variety that was planted the previous year.
We are talking with John Lauer, a professor of agronomy at UW-Madison, an expert in corn production, and we are talking about corn and the different varieties of corn grown in Wisconsin, the science of corn, and we're welcoming your questions for him. Maybe your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you a sweet corn lover? Everything you want to know about corn, but we're afraid to ask during this portion of the program. Coming up after 6:30, we will hear from a chef about how to use the sweet corn that we're finding in our farmers markets and grocery stores at this time of year, maybe even how to save some of it for the wintertime. Checking the weather forecast for today. Partly to mostly sunny, a chance of rain in northern Wisconsin this morning and then in central Wisconsin this afternoon. High temperatures today, upper 70s to mid-80s. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
Been to Auburndale, New Auburn, Berlin, New Berlin, London, New London, Rome, the other Rome, Franklin, the other Franklin, New Franklin, Richmond, New Richmond, Ridgewood, Woodruff, Woodford, Pleasantville, Pleasant Prairie, Sun Prairie, Star Prairie, Prairie Sheep, Prairie Sack, like Flambeau, Vernon. I've been over there, hey, smell that dairy here, hey.
We are celebrating corn in Wisconsin during this edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. This weekend in Sun Prairie is the annual Sweet Corn Festival. More than 100,000 people from around the Midwest will go and eat a gazillion ears of buttery sweet corn in Sun Prairie on Saturday and Sunday. And that prompted us to talk about the Wisconsin corn crop, the different varieties of corn grown in Wisconsin, including sweet corn, the seasonal favorite. And we're welcoming your questions about growing corn and corn production and the uses of corn in Wisconsin during this part of the program. We're going to be talking about eating corn and using corn in dishes coming up after 6:30. Our guest right now is John Lauer, a professor of agronomy at UW-Madison, an expert in corn production. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Fred in Adams County is with us first. Hello, Fred.
Good morning, folks, on this beautiful Wisconsin day. Now, I don't want to be really critical, but I like the old hybrids where you didn't have the super sweet. Wherever you go in Wisconsin, it's all bicolor. And you get the stuff from Florida in February and March. It's super sweet, tough kernels. And I talked to a local purveyor of corn here a week ago in Wisconsin Rapids. She said, we can't get them old hybrids. So why don't they have the original sweet corn without the super sweet? We all got sugar on the table. And that's my question. I mean, a bicolor, this is not the end of the world stuff, but I just wish I could have some old sweet corn that I could buy 40 years ago. I'm in my 70s, and I just, I don't care for this super sweet stuff, but I guess I can't do anything about it except, well, I don't want to complain. Hey, it's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, Fred. But so Fred can't get an original sweet corn, John Lauer?
Well, I think he probably could if you go to some of the older seed catalogs. Well, not the older seed catalogs, but I'm thinking of like Gurney's and Young's and some of those. I think those varieties are still out there, but certainly he's right in that most of the sweet corn that's at least sold in the store nowadays is the super sweets, and that's really where the consumers have gone, and the breeding of the crop has gone. But I think that there are still some of those old hybrids available. I see them every once in a while advertised in some of those seed catalogs you get every January.
Does the bicolor, does that make it sweeter because there's more of those sweet genes in it?
No, the bicolor doesn't really make it sweeter. That's really what we call a sugary gene that makes that sweetness. The coloring is just, I guess, part of the evidence that, I shouldn't say that. There are, that coloring is part of the evidence, I guess, of first of all, different colors that can be bred in, but it also is indicative of some of the kernels that might be a little bit more sweeter.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call, Fred. Joe in Harshaw is with us now. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joe. This is a great program. I've got a question for your guest. My dad in the old days, he would work about 20 minutes away from home, and he would call my mom up and say, "Betty, get the water boiling. Go down to the local farmer, have them pick the sweet corn right off the stalk, and then he'd get it in the water as soon as possible." And he said that was the best way to eat it because the sugars wouldn't turn to starch. And now I've got a bag of corn on my back porch that my neighbor gave me last night, and I didn't have a chance to cook it up. So how long does it take to, is my corn that I got yesterday from my neighbor, is it going to be as good as it would have been yesterday? How long does that the sugar turn to how long does it take for the sugars to turn to starch?
That's a good question. That conversion process starts immediately. Well, first of all, as I said before, sugars are what are translocated from the leaf of the plant through the stalk and into the kernels. And that whole process will be at its freshest and most sweet right on the plant. So as soon as you pick it, there's no more sugars being transported into that kernel except what's left in the cob of the plant. So that conversion process to starch is still going on in sweet corn. So over time, there will be kind of a conversion or less sweetness in the kernel. So yeah, you're right. If you want to have the sweetest possible type of sweet corn, then you would boil it as quick as you can. But that conversion process takes a while. It's going to be probably a week to 10 days before, you know, that sweetness would be gone completely from those kernels, and probably even a little bit longer. But it's a relatively slow process. As you know, when we transport sweet corn up from Florida, that's not an overnight process. And it happens, but it's a relatively slow process. That bag of corn that was dumped on your porch is probably still going to be pretty sweet today if you'd eat it up.
I like, Joe, your neighbor, though, dumping a bushel of sweet corn on your porch.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's not too bad. But you can, I guess that might be the difference I sometimes taste if we get corn that's not in season locally. It might taste tougher, or the kernels even doesn't taste as sweet as the stuff that you pick up at the farmer's market that they say they just pick that very morning.
Right, the best is just right off the plant.
Yeah. David in Madison emails, "What percentage of Wisconsin corn is grown for fuel? What type of corn is used for this purpose?"
For ethanol, about 30 to 35% of the feed corn crop is grown. So that means if we have 3 million acres going into into, well, if you look at a cornfield, basically, about one out of every, well, four out of ten rows, two out of every five rows of corn goes into an ethanol plant. So some of that is used for silage as well, but a big part, the most widely used products from corn is as a livestock feed and as ethanol now. There are still a lot of other, there's over 4,000 uses of corn, but those are the two dominant uses of corn in Wisconsin.
Ooh, not to start a big political debate here, but what about corn syrup? A lot of corn go into that?
Not particularly. If you look at all the food uses of corn, from your corn chips to corn flakes to corn syrup and that sort of thing, that is about 5 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need about 5% for seed for the next year.
You know, we have just a minute to go. Another listener wants to know, while I'm walking by cornfields, is there an easy way to identify if the corn is sweet corn rather than feed corn?
Yeah, I might get in trouble here because they might run in the field and start picking it. It's not very easy to do, but in general, sweet corn tends to be shorter. And if you look at their tassel, it tends to be, lack of a better word, fuller or more robust than field corn. That's probably the only way you can really tell. And the other way, of course, is to just take a bite.
There we go. Well, enjoy the sweet corn season, John Lauer. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
John Lauer, professor of agronomy at UW-Madison and expert in corn production. We are going to get some cooking lessons and ideas on how to use all this yummy sweet corn coming up after the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Friday, August the 19th. I'm Joy Cardine, and we will continue our discussion about sweet corn with a guest chef who has some tips on how we can use this yummy ingredient in all sorts of dishes. And we will welcome your questions and suggestions, too, after we hear this week's edition of Wisconsin Life. Many of the herbs and vegetables in our summer gardens are European immigrants. They came to Wisconsin as seeds and cuttings, along with the people that came to call Wisconsin home in the 19th century. Old World Wisconsin's historic gardener, Marcia Carmichael, tells us about a few of these world-traveling plants.
I'm into my sixth year as historical gardener, and I still love it, even when it's a hot summer. I'm not sure what the requirements are for the job, but love of the plants. Certainly, for me, it's the love of all the different ethnic varieties that are out here, and to be able to showcase what their strengths are and their charms and their characters and make each one speak for itself. Okay, just to let you know quickly the variety of things I picked this morning as I was traveling through the gardens. Lovage, a perennial celery-flavored plant, so often the leaves are used in soups and stews because they maintain a really nice flavor. It can be really large in the garden, so never for the front border of the garden, but he's this big, handsome guy who stands in the back, and it's one of those that, you know, early in the season people say, "What is it?" because he's coming up and he's so robust. And it is also rumored that because the stems are hollow and they have a celery flavor that you could drink tomato juice or Bloody Mary through it like a straw. But of course, I wouldn't know from experience, right? We grow marshmallow, and it looks like a small hollyhock. And it's generally the roots that are used, and they have really emollient properties. So if you slice it up, it's slippery and really good for the digestive tract and good for cosmetic uses. And I believe the original marshmallows were made from the root of this plant. So we're thinking sometime, wouldn't it be fun? You know, see if we can whip something up. They're not used anymore, but it's for that purpose. But it's really fun to grow them and introduce people to a marshmallow. Brought rosemary. And we have myrtle growing in the front garden. Rosemary and myrtle were two plants that had strong roots in Europe for their great significance, that they were really special, and often pieces were brought to America when the people came. Rosemary for remembrance, and often used in weddings and funerals and baptisms and things that had special family significance. And then the myrtle plant signified peace and love in the household. So often they were grown near the entry of the house and supposed to protect the house sort of from evil things. And considered really special. There's a lot of reference to bringing seeds from home and tubers and cuttings and little pieces. Probably not a lot of large plants were transported because there was so much that had to be brought with people. But there are even references to rose bushes traveling across the country by covered wagon and ox cart. And you think about that, and these are roses that probably a slip had come from the homeland, and that it was just that touch of home, so that when the women especially came not knowing what they were going to find, and they were going to be homesick and would miss all the things they'd left behind and had no idea if there would be anything quite this beautiful or this special. So a little piece of, you know, what mother had grown or grandmother had grown at home that they could continue to grow here. And sometimes they came in by in a broken teapot or came in a kettle or, you know, how they transported their plants. And they cared enough about them to pass that story on, you know, I think is really neat.
Commentator Marcia Carmichael is the historic gardener at Old World Wisconsin and the author of Putting Down Roots, Gardening Insights from Wisconsin's Early Settlers. This episode of Wisconsin Life was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council, supporting programs that use history, culture, and discussion to strengthen community life for everyone in Wisconsin. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Speaking of herbs, does anyone put any other herbs or spices on corn? Corn on the cob, besides salt? My husband got me into the habit of putting pepper on our corn on the cob, too, and I like that all right. And we will get some other ideas on how to prepare corn and use corn in other dishes during this half hour, as the sweet corn season in Wisconsin is in full gear. And we welcome your questions and your suggestions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. How do you like your sweet corn? Brian Moran is a culinary instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College and a chef and cooking instructor at Milwaukee Public Market. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
How do you like your sweet corn?
You know, I love my sweet corn right off the cob. Pretty simple. Straight ahead with a little bit of cumin on it. I love putting a different spice on other than salt to cut down on sodium for a change.
Yeah, I never thought of this. And I kind of heard this this piece about herbs and such, and I thought, why not cumin? That would taste really good, kind of a little Mexican spice, sort of
in Central American, and all those kind of flavors kind of enhance just the whole experience of corn. And as you were talking about before, pepper is always I always love pepper, but cumin is one that I've tried over the years, and I'm not a big fan of doing it with herbs necessarily, unless I shuck it off the corn. I love doing it as a salad, as an accompaniment to a fresh salad, just because it's an interesting texture to change into a salad.
Oh, that's interesting too. So, I mean, you just take a knife and cut the kernels off the corn?
Correct, exactly. And when I use corn in salads, it just adds to the color and the variety of different vegetables. It just gives it. It's also very interesting. I had it in France on pizza.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Pizza is one fun one that we like to. We make fresh pizzas here at home, and we will actually take the shucked corn and sprinkle it right over the top as another vegetable ingredient on top of the pizza, and I really love that.
Well, this is going to be a cooking 101 here. How do you make the perfect corn on the cob? Do you in terms of boiling it or grilling it or even microwaving it?
All three.
Yeah.
No, I what I'll do a lot of times in the summer, and we just had it recently, as everybody else has been having it recently, I hope, our Wisconsin corn, I always soak it in water for a little while in a clean sink, maybe an hour. And then I put it directly on my gas grill, and then I turn it. I'll shake off the moisture so it's not super wet after, drain it after you've soaked it in the water. Excuse me. And then I'll do it right directly on the grill. I don't roll it in foil. I guess if you roll it in foil, it'll steam and intensifies the heat a little bit quicker. Wrapped in foil, and that's an option, but we put it right on the grill.
With the husk on or off?
Yeah, with the husk on.
Okay.
And that kind of protects it helps to move it along with baking as it roasts on the, and right on your grill.
How long does it have to be on there?
It depends on how many pieces you're doing, but it also depends on the heat on the grill. I usually keep on the heat on about medium high, so it probably takes about 20 to 30 minutes.
And how about boiling it if we don't want to fire up the grill?
Boiling, I usually bring it to a boil, and then I turn it to a simmer and cover it and let it cook for about 40 minutes.
Really? That long?
That's about how... I'm usually busy running around doing other things, mm-hmm. so it ends up sitting in there that long anyway.
Yeah,
half an hour, I guess, is probably close to amount of time. It takes a little while to cook corn. It depends on how big the ears of corn are.
Mm-hmm. So besides delicious corn on the cob, which is everybody's favorite probably, and maybe throwing it in some salads and pizzas, do you have any other creative ideas on how we might be able to use the sweet corn that's so available right now? Go ahead.
One of my favorite ones that I used to make is a scallop and corn chowder.
Oh,
I love potato corn chowder. I think corn chowder or potato corn chowder is one of my favorite soups. It's just an interesting way. And in the summertime, I work down at the Milwaukee Public Market and I do cooking classes. And so working with seafood at St. Paul Fish Company, one of the recipes I remember reading and I'd like to try was scallop corn chowder. And I think that's a really interesting way, different way to use corn.
And you could have on the side some cornbread with the whole kernels of corn.
Exactly. Yeah, right. You know, I remember my mom and dad making Johnny cake, as we called it, with cornbread with fresh cornbread with corn in it, and pancakes with corn.
Pancakes with corn.
Yeah, pancakes in the summertime, late summer, this time of the year when you can get fresh corn, and then again you shuck it off and sprinkle some of that into the batter takes me back to my childhood.
I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, we have some callers, so let's go to Jamie in Sparta first. Hi, Jamie.
Well, hello. This is a subject very near to my heart. It reminds me of my childhood. I grew up on a large organic produce farm, and we sold sweet corn to Milwaukee, and a lot of it, too, like 1,500 dozen a day.
Wow.
My father was positively obsessed with the proper cooking methods of sweet corn. He was constantly cooking corn, and we were instructed to tell our customers, every single one, the proper way to cook it. You're only supposed to heat it 2 minutes or less in boiling water. And then he introduced the microwave, and he was obsessed with that. And it's a minute and a half on high. You only want to heat it.
Wow.
That's always what we were instructed. And if you fried it, you're supposed to fry it with okra, because it always tastes best fried with okra.
Oh, that's really something. Wait, I want to know this microwave.
Every single customer we had to tell that to.
Oh, my goodness. Because only corn and okra can be fried together.
Yes, according to my dad. And for breakfast, fried corn and okra with eggs on are very, very good.
Oh.
I believe it.
I spent, 20 years of my life doing this. Dad, as long as I can remember, was always in the kitchen doing something with corn.
Well, it sounds like he had a lot of great tips and ideas. I've got some just from that. How do you do what do you like to do with corn these days, Jamie?
I prefer it raw myself, but that's because I grew up that way, just eating, you know. But he was right, though. You only want to heat it. You don't want to cook corn. It should be crunchy. So you just heat it up. So you throw it in boiling water, and then you pull it out after like a minute and a half or two, and that's all you need to do. And I will agree with him, though. Fried okra and corn together is like the greatest combination on earth. Nothing beats it. That's absolutely my favorite method.
Thank you very much, Jamie. That sounds good, doesn't it, Brian?
Sounds delicious.
We are talking about ways to use sweet corn. We hope you will share some of your recipes and tips for cooking with corn along with our guest, Brian Moran, who is a culinary instructor at the Milwaukee Area Technical College and a chef and cooking instructor at the Milwaukee Public Market. We are celebrating sweet corn because sweet corn is in season. We were prompted as well by the Sweet Corn Festival that is taking place in Sun Prairie this weekend, the annual Sweet Corn Festival. More than 100,000 people from around the Midwest are going to converge on Sun Prairie on Saturday and Sunday and eat thousands upon thousands of ears of buttery sweet corn. How do you like your corn? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be a partly to mostly sunny day today. There is a chance of rain in northern Wisconsin this morning and in central Wisconsin this afternoon. Highs today, upper 70s to mid 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay with us coming up after 7 o'clock. It's our August open line. We hope that you will share your ideas and suggestions for future guests and topics for the Joy Cardine Show coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now we are talking about corn. And we're wondering if you have a favorite way to prepare corn. All the local fresh sweet corn that is available at our farmers markets and local grocery stores these days. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Karen on Facebook writes, I make a delicious corn risotto with fresh corn puree and Parmesan cheese.
That sounds delicious.
Oh my goodness, yes it does. She says it's best. It's at its best in the summer with fresh corn, and then by September, my husband is sick of it. So what about preserving the corn? If we, let's say we have lots of it right now. I saw a friend on Facebook was sautéing, I guess, some corn, and then he was going to freeze it and save it for, you know, a snowy day or something.
What we usually do and what we teach students when I do at home is we'll blanch the corn. Like the gentleman said, although I think that was just their personal preference on cooking corn for a minute and a half and then eating it because they like it hard and crunchy. And everybody's got preferences. You know, I've seen recipes for grilling corn and it only takes 20 minutes. Again, it depends on the heat and whether you have the husk on and off, you know, like I was saying before. We will blanch fresh corn. You can either take it off the cob or do the whole corn of cob. Cob of corn,
mm-hmm.
And blanching, meaning put it in boiling water and letting it cook for a minute or two, and then we take it out with a pair of tongs and put it in a bowl of ice water, and that shocks the corn and stops the cooking process. Then, after that cools down, we'll dry it off and wrap them up individually and freeze them individually. And that extends the life of the corn and makes it a little bit easier to handle. So then you have it par, kind of almost started cooked, and you can pull it out 2 or 3 months later, do the same thing. You throw it in the water and cook it for, and then again, it might only take 10 or 15 minutes. I like my corn cooked a little bit longer, so...
Boy, that sounds good and easy, too. We have
We
have tons of callers. People like their corn. Cindy and Racine. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. It's very nice to hear your program as I get ready for work.
I'm glad you called.
This year I've experienced the most unique way I've ever had corn. Near my office in Racine, we have a street vendor who around 4:30 each evening brings his cart up the street, parks in front of a local grocery store, and serves corn that he cuts right off the cob from the steamer, then serves it with mayonnaise, a hard cheese similar to Parmesan, chili powder, butter, and I get a squeeze of lime on mine. And it's a little to-go box. It's about the equivalent of 2 years of corn.
Where did he come up with that? But it does sound really good.
I have the feeling it may be something from the Mexican culture.
It is
Hispanic.
Yeah.
It's definitely a Mexican tradition to do it that way.
That sounds great, and I wish I had that street vendor around here.
Right.
Does that ever sound good?
I think when we know where we're going for our corn tonight.
Yeah. Cindy, thank you so much. And yeah, a little lime juice and chili powder. Mm.
Exactly. All those things complement corn. Those are all really, chili powder is a wonderful way to enhance the flavor, like the cumin thing that like I talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Susan in Minocqua, I bet you she has another good idea. Hi, Susan. Susan, are you there? Oh, I lost Susan.
Oh, no.
She gave up. I think she was going to talk about cooking corn in a steamer. But we are so short on time. David in Wausau has some tips on cooking corn in a microwave.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Great program. Yeah, what we like to do, and I was told this from a friend, you just take the corn and you don't peel it or anything, go pick it, put it in the microwave for about a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes, depending upon your microwave. Take it out, leave it sit for a little while because it's going to be very hot. And, boy, it's perfect. You don't lose any of its nutrients because you're not boiling all of the nutrients out of it.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's just excellent and fast.
So keep the husk on it when you throw it in the micro. Hey.
Oh, definitely.
All right. Thank you very much, David. Appreciate that. Bill Martens claims that some people make ice cream with corn. Have you ever heard of this, Brian?
We were talking about that the other day when we were discussing the show. And, you know, we've seen everything. You see every different idea and concept for putting corn in. And ice cream is one of them. I've seen it, but I've never tasted it. And, you know, I think the sweetness is the one thing that would lend itself really well to ice cream. But, you know, it's kind of that old adage that you got to try everything once. And you know, why not? Give it a whirl.
In fact, he looked it up, and the Milwaukee Public Market has someone doing a class coming up, and one of the things that they will teach is how to make sweet corn ice cream. So maybe you can...
I better stop in and check that out and learn something new.
What is a... Do you have a class coming up at the Milwaukee Public Market?
I do. I'll be teaching a class on freshwater fish on September 21st, I believe it is. And you know, I might just sneak in some corn into one of those recipes this year.
I hope I can take one of your classes sometime.
Oh, I'd love
too.
To have you.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brian Moran, culinary instructor at the Milwaukee Area Technical College and a chef and cooking instructor at the Milwaukee Public Market, talking with us today about ways to make and eat sweet corn. I think Bill Martens also posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page some other recipes that you might want to check out on sweet corn recipes. And we thank him for being with us. We also thank John Lauer, a professor of agronomy at UW-Madison, who we heard from in our first half hour, who told us about the growing of sweet corn in Wisconsin. Well, I'm looking forward to trying some of these recipes this weekend. The Sun Prairie Sweet Corn Festival is taking place on Saturday and Sunday in Sun Prairie. You can go and eat lots of corn on the cob there if you'd like to. Thanks to Bill Martens and to Chris Molina for producing this hour. Thank you for joining in. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.